Thanks for downloading this edition of The Why Factor, a programme that seeks to find out why we do the things we do. Coming up, part of our series on death and on life too. BBC World Service, I'm Mike Williams with The Why Factor. This week, the ethical considerations around assisted death, helping someone else to die.
This was a letter that my parents signed, and it says, "To whom it may concern. Betty and I have always felt that should our quality of life deteriorate, we would wish to die together with dignity in our own home."
This is Georgina Roberts.
"We do not wish to carry on living, knowing that our illnesses will progress and get worse. We've discussed this intention of ending our own lives over the years with our close friends and family, and feel that it should be our right and choice to decide when we die."
Betty had Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia. David, a retired doctor, had sclerosis of the spine and had had a leg amputated.
"We would like to thank everyone who has helped us since our health deteriorated and make it clear that we have not been influenced or assisted by any other person in our decisions or actions." And then it's signed by my father and my mother and witnessed by their very close friend.
You say not been influenced or assisted by any other person.
Well, obviously, but my father didn't want me to go to prison.
The couple had tried and failed to kill themselves once before. This time, Georgina said she would help them to die. In a few countries, terminally ill people suffering pain and distress are allowed to get help from friends, family and physicians to bring their lives to an end. In many countries, though, it's a crime.
They had a lovely day. Mum was very lucid that day. She was in quite a good mood. And they talked about what a wonderful life they'd had. And it was quite heartbreaking, to be honest, but it lovely in a way, because how many people get to say they hear their parents talking in such a wonderful way about their life? I had very mixed feelings about it, obviously. It was almost like I was on remote control, if you like. I knew I had to do something, but I wasn't quite sure how it was all going to pan out.
My mind, it likes to go to those dark places. That's where I dwell and always think the worst. I'm often scared.
Assisted Suicide the Musical. It's a comedy.
My health, my life is cursed.
Liz Carr is a disability rights activist, an actor and a playwright.
Of course I did it for the attention that the title will bring. I think, like the subject matter, I think what you actually get when you see the show is very different. It's much more complicated. And so through using musical theatre and some of the tropes and some of the ideas of musical theatre, I look at this subject matter from the point of view of somebody who is opposed. And actually creating a piece of art and a piece of theatre can open people up, I think, in a way that other mediums can't.
I have to decide to walk on through with my body scarred, an emergency exit when life gets hard. There is a door.
If you ask anyone, do you want people to die in pain and suffering? None of us want that. We all believe the same. I think the only difference between me and those who want to change in the law is that I'm concerned about giving doctors more power over our life and our death. I think a lot of that comes from the fact that being a disabled woman, I've spent a lot of my life with the medical profession. I've seen their fallibilities. I've seen their stereotypes. I've seen their prejudice. I've seen the effects of cuts. I've seen the effects of now privatisation.
Helping someone to kill themselves is illegal in the UK, but there are attempts to get the law revised. The rules are most liberal in Belgium, where recently a 17-year-old boy became the first minor to be granted help with dying. And in the United States, California has become the fifth state to approve what they've called physician-assisted death.
The case case of Brittany Maynard, who was a young woman who unfortunately passed away from brain cancer, her case and her activism around her experience with end-of-life care really prompted a widespread campaign around trying to allow California to provide physician-assisted death.
Dr. Sunita Puri works in palliative care in a hospital in California, and she wrote the hospital's policy on the new law.
Under the law, if a patient comes to me and says, I'd like to pursue the aid in dying option, in order to be eligible, they have to have a prognosis of 6 months or less in my best estimation, and they have to be of sound mind, meaning that I have to believe that they are able to make this request, you know, in the absence of a psychiatric illness that's leading them to make the request. And they also have to be able to self-administer the medication. This isn't a situation where a family member could give them the medicine. They actually have to be able to give it to themselves. So those three things are of paramount importance. I also have to believe that they are not being coerced into exercising this option. What's interesting about the eligibility to me is that the same prognosis, meaning they have to, in our best estimation, have a lifespan of 6 months or less, that's the same criteria for admission to hospice care. You know, I think the use of that standard has been rightfully borrowed from a longer standing program and idea.
What is it like to watch a person die, and particularly a person who wouldn't die without your help?
When you have never seen somebody die in complete gratitude, joy, surrounded by members of the family, it is not something horrible. It is not something that is to be afraid of. This makes me know that it is something that should be accepted in all countries.
Dr. Erika Preissig runs what she calls an AVD organisation in Switzerland. AVD, Assisted Voluntary Death. She helps people who've decided they want to die to fulfil their wishes.
This shows me that it is okay, it can be accepted. I wanted to fight for legalisation in other countries. It cannot be that very, very ill people who would be judged as unable to travel by any doctor are travelling to Switzerland just to end their life. This is unhuman.
This is a picture of your folks here.
Yeah, my parents there. This was about 10 years before they died. So my father in this one was about 72. My mother would have been about 79.
Georgina helped them buy a lethal drug, and she mixed it for them because they couldn't do it themselves. She put the glasses on the tables beside them and watched them drink. David died, but when Georgina called to report the deaths, the paramedics found that Betty still had a pulse. Over Georgina's objections, they tried to resuscitate her, but failed.
What happened with the police?
I did actually make up a story about how... Well, we'd agreed that this was what I should do. I should say that I'd gone home and that I'd come back and I'd found them. Because I thought, well, I've got to give it a go, because I didn't relish the thought of 14 years in prison.
But the police weren't satisfied with her version of events and called her in for more questioning.
I was invited to go to the local police station and make a statement, at which point I got a barrister involved who asked me to make two statements, one about how my parents had always spoken about their wishes, to who and, you know, to their friends, and another one to say, well, actually what happened on the day. They asked me to read those out.
Did you tell the truth this time?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The statements were a complete fact, you know, everything. I just said, you know, I'd said that because I was worried that I was going to go to prison. I'm well aware of the law or how it stands. Obviously, by this point, I mean, they told the barrister they were thinking of charging me with assisting my father's suicide and conspiring with my father to murder my mother. So pretty hefty charges. They asked me to read this out, and I got about halfway through the first page and just burst into tears because it was very cathartic, and all that emotion that I kept in check had just come straight out. And after I'd read this out and got through a box of tissues, the sergeant and the other police officer that was in there said that that was the most complete statement they'd ever heard from anybody. So they knew I wasn't lying.
Even where assisted dying is permitted, there are many hurdles to overcome. Perhaps the most important is the question of informed consent.
Forgive me, but I have to ask whether you think she was competent to agree to this.
Yes, obviously, a year later we had the inquest. That was really hard because at the inquest, the coroner in the end actually said that although he felt that Dad had committed suicide and that, you know, that was his choice, he couldn't decide whether Mum actually made the choice or not, which was very difficult. Her doctor, who'd been treating her for the Alzheimer's, also gave evidence, and she said she didn't feel she could make the right choice. But when Dad was in hospital and just lost his leg, and, you know, she'd had Alzheimer's then and vascular dementia for about 3 years, she said, you know, I don't like this illness I've got. She said, I don't want to be here. It's not fair, you know, and it's not me. I know she knew what she was doing. And I couldn't live with myself or sleep at night if I hadn't believed that.
I think there's a very big concern about whether patients are in a place in terms of their mental health to make these requests competently, that maybe somebody requesting this is suffering from a mental illness that's leading them to ask for this medication. And sorting that out is something that, to many of my physician colleagues, feels beyond their scope of practice. Really, the conversation with patients when they come to a physician asking for an aid in dying drug about what their experience has been, what they're looking for, what their particular kind of suffering is the most important piece in moving forward or deciding whether or not you want to help them. Some arguments against this law and reasons that my physician colleagues have come up with include that they went into medicine and took an oath not to do harm and not to undermine the sanctity of life. And so participating in this act would do just that. It would allow somebody to take their own life when physicians are generally in the business of saving lives.
Did you swear the Hippocratic Oath? And if so, how do you square it with the work that you do now? Do no harm.
The Hippocratic Oath should be replaced by something else. I would swear any time that I will prolong life as long as life is worth living for the person concerned and always for the person concerned. If life is just suffering and it will never ever get better again, then I do have the right to help ending this life in security.
Some other physicians believe that this option was made available before widely available palliative care services were available to patients. And so they questioned whether participating in this law really is the most ethical way to approach end-of-life options. Others believe that this constitutes a slippery slope, that it would disproportionately affect vulnerable groups, and it might even be expanded in the future to include patients with non-terminal illness or non-voluntary euthanasia.
When somebody, a non-disabled person, says they want to end their life, we see that as a tragedy. We put in suicide prevention, we try and stop them. When somebody like me, somebody that looks quite frail, somebody that is disabled, somebody that needs help, asks to end their life, I believe that public perception is such that it's much easier to go, I can understand that and see that as a compassionate act and one about choice. There seems to be a distinction that with one group of people, it feels to me, it's a tragedy. And with the other, it feels compassionate. And I wonder why that is. And just the fact I think there is that discrepancy says we should be careful about enshrining allowing doctors to help in the deaths of some people and not others. How do we draw that line?
I have to ask you something. Why can abortion be accepted almost all over the world? You kill a healthy young person, and if this person would have a voice, it would scream, I want to live. Now we have a very handicapped, old, suffering person which has had its life and says, I'm so glad that I became 80 years old, but now the only thing I do is suffering. And he begs you, please let me die. And we say, no. How can that be that countries accept abortion and they do not accept assisted voluntary death? I cannot understand that.
Can I ask you about your faith? What is it?
My faith?
Which church do you attend? Which synagogue? Which mosque?
Salvation Army. Yes.
Does the teaching of the Salvation Army clash at all with the work that you're doing? Is that a tension in your life?
I think all religious groups would reject assisted voluntary death because they say life was given by God and God is the only man to take life back, to end life. And I do not believe in this anymore because as a doctor, I do prolong life so many times where maybe God wanted to take this person home. And I do not accept. I do some stents with the coronary heart disease and give this person a life which is much longer. And then he runs into a cancer. But maybe God would have liked to take him to eternal spirit, up to the sky long before. And I made him not do it by putting the stents in. And then he dies of a cancer in a horrible way. And then I have the right also to use my technology of medicine, which is giving him the assisted voluntary death. And I do have no bad consciousness at all anymore towards religious beliefs.
So in the show, I duet with myself. There's a different version of me because I believe that, you know, whilst I have all these great things happening in my life as Liz Carr, I'm just a flick of a care package or a budget cut away from being someone that could want to end their life. That's all of us, I think, and certainly a disability reality. And so I explore the topic through looking at a different version of me who wants to end their life and the version of me who's fighting to survive.
There is a door which can set us free. I can't trust you. I can't trust me with the key.
Thanks for listening to The Y Factor. If you'd like to hear more episodes, do visit the website bbcworldservice.com/Y Factor.